Radiophrenia, the light at the end of the dial.
Welcome to Radiophrenia Redux, a programme presenting selections from the Radiophrenia archives. These works were originally aired during our second season of broadcasts between August and September 2016. In a little while, you'll hear A Lament for the Glasgow High-Rise by Duke Cameron. But first, we present The Edible Pet by Zoe Irvin and her son Logan. This is a story that crosses continents, travels from pet keeping to dining table, taking in some back garden ethics, pet psychology, trans species music making, dramatic mishaps, life, death, and recipes. Warning, there are some scenes of a graphic nature. This program contains meat and may not be suitable for vegans or vegetarians.
Chloé, notre petite fille, leur a donné des noms, mais moi, alors il y a les deux premières là. Il y a Chaussette et.
His granddaughter has given names to them. Yes. One of them is called Chaussette.
Princesse, Chaussette, Biscotte, Chippy.
One's called Redneck, one's called Midnight.
Étoile.
I like that they're just in your garden and you actually have pets. Because now we don't have any pets, because we used to have a hamster, it died. We used to have fish, they died. And it's nice to just, like, have pets in the house.
Diamond is cautious. Tweed, it's Morris's. She's kind of like a goldeny brown one.
Princess.
Princess. Chaussette.
Chippy, Biscotte, Rose, Étoile.
Rose, merci.
Et l'autre, je ne sais plus.
No, that's it, 6.
Ça y est, c'est bon.
Ah. Merci beaucoup.
Jack is dead.
Jack is dead.
Jack is dead.
We used to have 4, but we lost the grey one a long, long time ago, and we lost the white one, I think in February, maybe.
What kind of things do you feed them?
They eat anything.
What do we not feed them, do you know?
Meat.
We looked at Jackie on the Sunday when you brought her round, and we decided not to eat her that day. We ate her the following day, and there was definitely some discussion because she was quite a slender beast.
Yeah, she was very little.
She was very little. We wondered whether roasting her would just make her diminish in size.
Jackie was really adventurous. She really wanted to adventure about.
You start getting into some of the interesting bits and really sorting out what is delicious from what is not. One of the things that is not delicious is this little bumpy gland and nozzle right there above her tail.
And she sometimes went behind the back of the shed. And then she found lots of worms and snails and slugs and stuff like that.
If I squeeze it, this kind of yellow oil comes out. The yellow oil does not taste really good.
So I quite fancied cutting up the carcass into pieces and mixing it in with onions and then baking in a dish with lots of different flavors and everything else.
I just kind of cut down to the spine. And kind of scoop up that gland.
Do you remember the conversations we had later that day after school? About, you know, what do we do with Jackie?
Yeah.
This is fat. That's delicious. This, not so much.
We are meat eaters, aren't we? And she is an edible pet.
Yeah.
But it's quite odd having an edible pet, don't you think?
Dogs.
Would you eat a dog?
No.
Cat?
Would you eat a cat?
No.
Why?
Because.
And these feet are delicious in their own way, but they're kind of crusty, so I want to get those off of there. I just feel where the joint is.
Because it would be quite awkward and it would be quite hard.
And cut it and you'd see your toes relax as I cut the tendons.
Which probably would have been delicious, but then Andrew quite rightly pointed out they have got a really distinct flavour, and what we should probably do is to make a lot of vegetables but still just quite simply roast her.
Because it would be quite awkward.
You mean the killing of the cat?
Yeah.
When I teach people about butchering, I want to emphasize, like, hey, it's not being about brutal and macho. It's really about understanding that, hey, you kill things and eat them.
But let's say the cat's just been hit by a car.
Okay.
We roasted her and we used the fat that came off her, and we roasted potatoes and butternut squashes and braised a cabbage.
I didn't make up how the world works, but it just seems to be what needs to happen, whether it's a chicken or whether it's a carrot. And it's just our vertebrate bias that might make a chicken seem different than a carrot.
And then had some peas as well. And then we made gravy out of the non-fatty stuff. So every single bit was all consumed, and she was delicious.
So, okay, cat's just been hit by a car. What do you do, Logan?
Call the vet.
Yeah, that's what we did do, isn't it, when we saw a dead cat in the street. But not once did we think, do you know what? I think we should eat this cat.
Okay. Okey-doke. I'm going to slit the skin. Zip. And we got a couple of tubes to deal with here. We have the trachea, the windpipe, which kind of feels like a plastic straw. It's fairly stiff. And then we have this tube, the esophagus, which is where all the food comes in. And my goal here is to remove the digestive tract in one piece. So I'm going to start at this end by loosening it up. There's this bag here. You can see some of the remains of her food. And I'm going to loosen that up.
And you sent me a picture. I looked at the picture and thought, oh, that looks delicious. And wow, look, that's a quarter of a cabbage. That's extraordinary.
Yeah, totally recommend that, by the way. I had never roasted a cabbage before, and it is amazing. It's not braising, but do it.
So you just put it in the oven?
Yeah, we cut a Savoy cabbage into quarters, put it in the oven, drizzle a bit of oil on top.
So what is a pet?
It's kind of like something that you keep, and it's a living animal and you take care of it. A dog or a cat or some hens.
Cook it for a while until the leaves start to go crunchy, and then cover it with foil, and then the juices just braise the internals of it, and then you get this wonderful crispy on the outside, soft on the inside deliciousness. I like it with a bit of wine chucked in there as well.
Mm. Oh my goodness, sounds very good.
We have three hens, but one night mommy couldn't let to close the hens in.
Both your great grandmas had hens.
Great grandma had hens in Scotland and in Uganda, in Africa. And great granny had hens in Ireland.
I was about 21. My mother was seriously ill and had to go into hospital. And I was left to look after the hens. So I was very anxious to do a good job, and spent a lot of time with these hens. But unfortunately, the egg numbers went down, and the egg numbers went down, and the egg numbers went down, and until they were laying about half the number of eggs they normally laid. And I didn't want to tell Mummy because she was so poorly. I kept saying, the hens are fine, the hens are fine. And then eventually Mummy came out of hospital and came home and wanted to see her hens. So it turned out that I hadn't understood properly how much I should feed the hens. And the poor hens were undernourished, and that's why they had stopped laying so many eggs.
Nightmare.
Did I feel good or did I not? And in about a month's time, they were all back laying their normal eggs, and no hens had died, but there was just a loss of income for a while, but that was grand. It became a joke in the end, you know, don't let Doreen feed your hens. The hen money, the money the wife got for the eggs, that was her kind of money. And that's what she did, bits and pieces in the house with her, you know, maybe a bunch of a new dress or something. But that was considered the woman's money. The hen money was the money. And the men seldom ever looked after the hens. Mummy looked after them, and any money that came was hers then.
Guti, 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 gutesco, gutesco. Chi compres tu mazzaltiul che potesse, che potesse. Kikiriki, voli de vi, cacaraca, voli de pa. Cut, cut, cut it, di lavoro. Cut, cut, cut it, di lavoro. Cut, cut, cut it, cut, cut, cut it.
The keeping of hens was really Grandma's ticket to getting to Uganda, because in the wartime you couldn't get a passage in a convoy unless you had some reason to be travelling. And she was married, newly married, and that was one reason, but they said at the research station where Father was working that if she had a skill that she could take, they would manage to get her out a wee bit quicker. So they asked what she could do, and she said, well, I'm trained poultress.
A Household Book for Africa by E. G. Bradley. When you start housekeeping in Africa, cut a hole in a tin and put a penny in for each chicken that you eat. When you retire, you will have a sum large enough to start a poultry farm on your own, if you can bear the sight of the things.
Great, come here and set up a poultry station. And it was a research station not too far from Kampala in Uganda. But it would have been a little enclave of people doing research, including my father, who was doing research into cotton and cotton plants and the viability of cotton in Uganda.
African village fowls are smaller and darker than their European kindred. They are more like game birds, and when treated with ingenuity and respect, need not become objects of despair.
There was nothing there, I think, when she arrived. So she had to search about, get the carpenters to make chicken coops and make a little chicken run. And then she had to find chickens, which included, I think, going around villages and speaking to people and saying, do you know where there are any hens? And she just gathered together a gaggle of hens, basically.
Your cook will chop off the head of the bird and hang it by the legs overnight in the feathers. The next morning, he will remove the feathers and the entrails. He will use the neck and wings for soup.
And she started breeding, I think. She probably must have had a cockerel because she started breeding them. And it was quite a success. So she got going enough hens and eggs to keep the place viable.
Fry the chicken livers with bacon for breakfast, or roll them in bacon for savouries, or dice them and fry them with onion, parsley and herbs for omelette, or cook them a little and pound them into a paste with mustard, salt, pepper, Worcester or tomato sauce, or chutney juice to make a savoury meat paste.
I'm sure she would have had help. She would have done almost nothing herself except for the actual poultry handling. But the building of the place, of course, would have been done, And, I mean, goodness knows what feed was. Perhaps it was scraps from the kitchen. I really don't know. The local people living in villages, they had hens. Mm-hmm. So
they must
she must have got maize and things to feed them from wherever they locally got things. So she got it going quite successfully. But then, I don't suppose they were there all that long. What do
Two
you
years.
Think? 2 years.
2 years. They went home on their first... Leave.
Yeah.
That was allowed.
To devil chicken legs, score them, spread them with thin-made mustard and a few drops of Worcester sauce, roll an egg and crumb or flour, seasoned with curry powder, and fry them in plenty of very hot fat with potatoes, onions, etc.
And what was Grandma like with the hens? I mean, she never had them as pets, did she?
No, exactly. I don't remember them as pets.
She had a different attitude.
Yes.
And then did she kill them and eat them?
She absolutely did. Mm. She was very good at wringing their necks. Mm. She could tuck the hen under her arm.
Yeah.
She got hold of the head in her other hand. Mm. And she was very good. You do a very particular pull and twist. And it's very quick. Mm. We watched it often as children.
I don't remember that very much. But I do remember her saying that when she was being trained in Auchincruith, they knew that next term or something, they were going to have to learn how to dispatch a hen and various other birds. And she was quite frightened. And her father said, I'll show you how it's done. And he took her around the barn and they practiced, I think. So they might have had two or three.
Well, that was for a goose.
Oh, it was a goose, was it?
Yes, she knew how to do a hen.
I see.
But a goose is big and strong.
Yes.
And she knew it would be a battle.
Right. Yes.
I mean, there are so many methods, including trapping its head under a broomstick and so on. But she learnt from him. And she was much happier about going back to college once she knew, really, she'd done it already.
Fricassee. Fry an onion or a garlic clove in butter or fat or olive oil. Thicken with flour and cook until an even brown. Add cold stock or milk until the gravy is thin. Put in cut-up chicken and cook until tender. Season with sauces.
I watched how you took the guts out and removed the gizzard and the heart.
Being shown the grains in the
inside
gizzard.
Inside the gizzard, yes.
I think you did that for me. I remember.
I'm sure I did. I'm sure I will have done. I was always able to do that.
Club sandwich. A slice of buttered toast. On top of it, a slice of chicken garnished with sauce or mayonnaise. On top of that, a slice of buttered toast. On top of that, some grilled bacon. And on top of that, a slice of buttered toast. Keep hot. Just before serving, put some lettuce and tomato, vinaigrette or mayonnaise on the top. Cut this three-decker sandwich into four and serve at once. It is a balanced and adequate meal in itself. Chicken in aspic. Melt some gelatin in clear chicken soup. When it is cool and thickening, roll slices of chicken in it and leave it to get cold. The aspic that collects at the sides of the dish is cut up and served in a salad with the chicken. Sliced vegetables, parsley, cucumber, radish, tomato, peas in the aspic make a pretty dish. Boiled fowl. There is no more depressing sight than a whole naked boiled fowl steaming on a plate. Don't allow it. Skin it and cover the brute in a parsley or caper sauce, or better still, cut it into neat joints and pour the sauce over it. Garnish with slices of boiled marrow, or hollow out the marrow, boil it, put the diced chicken into the centre and cover with parsley or caper sauce. To boil, put the chicken in a pot, nearly cover it with water, add salt, pepper, diced vegetables and onions. Boil it for a long time until the chicken no longer resists the fork.
Once upon a time there was a little red hen. She lived all by herself in a little house in the woods.
I miss him.
Did you love Jackie?
Mm-hmm. I miss him.
It was a her.
Yeah, I miss him.
Me too.
one day she managed to climb upstairs into the top room and poops on the bed and three poops there.
The sly young fox wanted to eat the little red hen for his dinner. He made all sorts of plans to catch her. He tried many, many times to catch her.
One night, Mummy forgot to close the hens in. And then a fox came.
Oh, no.
Our hen called Jackie got bit under the wing.
When Daddy opened her wing up, I saw, like, a dragon-y bite.
Do you think there's a chance she was killed by a dragon?
Yeah, it was.
One day, the sly young fox said to his mother, "Today I will catch the little red hen. I have made the best plan of all."
They bite it at the same time, like...
Sort of fox and a dragon?
Like...
I shall put the little red hen in this bag, he said to his mother as he went out. Put a pot of water on the fire to boil. We shall have the little red hen for our dinner.
Can you tell me about the night that Jackie was killed, Daddy?
Of course. I was deeply asleep. I think it was about 5 in the morning. And I was woken up by a tapping noise and what turned out to be a hen sort of squawking. Tap, squawk, tap, squawk, tap, squawk. And I tried to go back to sleep.
Then the sly young fox crept up to the little red hen's house. He hid himself by the side of the house and waited. Soon the little red hen came out of her little house. She did not see the sly young fox.
And it woke me up again, so it must have been a good few minutes before I actually got up, out through the bedroom door, in through the living room door, and then at the back door, which is a glass door, was Tweed, one of our hens, and she'd been the one making a terrible clacking noise. She must have maintained it for about 5 minutes to get me downstairs, and I opened the door, and I really knew something was up because she didn't run away. She sort of stood there, so I picked her up and stroked her, and I sort of looked about, well, where's everybody else? And so I walked through the garden, which isn't very big, and through the hen-proof fence, which Tweed somehow got over, and went to the coop, and there was one hen there brooding.
The little red hen had left the door of the house open, and when her back was turned, the sly young fox crept inside the house. The sly fox hid behind the door. The little red hen carried her wood into the house. She shut the door. Then she saw the sly young fox.
And then round the back of the coop was Jackie.
Up on the high beam, the little red hen felt safe. She knew that the sly young fox could not get her up there. Round and round went the sly young fox, round and round without stopping. Soon the little red hen's head began to go round and round and round. She became so dizzy that she fell down from the high beam. Ha ha! said the sly young fox, as the little red hen dropped into his bag. Who said I could not catch you?
I went round the back of the hen house and I saw Jackie. I thought she was asleep in a strange way, but her head was pointing backwards. And then I looked around a bit more and there was feathers around the garden. This whole time I had Tweed in my hand, stroking her. And then I sat for a few minutes and stroked her. And she didn't want to escape at all. She was quite happy to be there.
It was a hot day. On the way, the fox sat down for a rest and soon he fell asleep. When the fox was asleep, the little red hen popped her head out of the bag. Then she crept quietly out. The little red hen picked up some big stones. She put the stones in the bag. Then back home she ran.
Yeah, we inspected the bird, the dead bird. And I thought almost it had been shot by an air rifle because it was just like a pinprick of a hole in its chest. But I think, well, it was a fox. It just grabbed it and squeezed it. Yeah, and there was feathers around the garden.
As the sly young fox came to his den, he shouted to his mother, "I've got the little red hen, at last! Is the water boiling?" "Yes, my son," said his mother. Then the sly young fox opened the bag over the pot of boiling water. The big stones fell into the water with a very big splash. The boiling water splashed all over the sly young fox and his mother. They were both killed at once.
The end. No, wait, not the end.
The little red hen lived happily ever after in her little house in the woods.
I miss her eggs.
I think you had it for breakfast this morning, that egg.
Oh.
Was it nice?
Yeah. That was the last egg Jackie laid.
That's right.
Then we went and got Logan. We waited a while longer and got Morris. He kind of cried for a moment and said, "Can I see it?" So I took him to the garage where the corpse had been moved to. And his immediate concern was whether the eyes would be squishy or not. So he confirmed that indeed Jackie's eyes were squishy. He's quite interested in that. And I showed him where the bite was.
Touch the eye.
That's amazing, isn't it? Because when the hens are alive, you really can't touch their eyes, can you? And then did you look while I was plucking the feathers and taking the guts out?
Yeah.
And what was that like?
Disgusting. You could see your skin. The skin gets burned and then it turns into a flake. Then you can eat the skin. That's good. That's... Can't see anymore. I can't see anymore.
Yeah, Tweed was obviously pretty traumatised. She now, she still stays close to the house. And she never used to try and get in the house, whereas now she'll try and sneak in and sit under the kitchen table as often as she can. Which I actually don't mind.
C'est la boulette grise qui pendant l'église, elle va pondre un petit coco pour son petit qui va faire d'ordiche. Elle va pondre un petit coco pour son petit qui va faire dodo, d'ordiche, dodo. C'est la poulette blanche qui pond dans les branches. Elle va pondre un petit coco pour Louise qui va faire d'audition, elle va pondre un petit coco. Pour Louise qui va faire dodo, dodiche, dodo.
L'histoire de Géraldine.
Des poules et de mon d'un hérisson.
Ah, it's the story of a
hedgehog.
Bah, c'est il y a 2 ans. C'était en pleine nuit, hein, 2 heures du matin, il n'y a pas un son. J'entends mes 5 poules complètement affolées, crier, enfin complètement paniquées. Donc...
So it was the middle of the night and suddenly the hens are making a big noise.
Yes.
And you come out to see what the problem is.
Donc je vais voir avec ma lampe de poche, je regarde partout.
With a torch.
They were panicking and yeah. Making a noise and flapping
and
around.
You know, you get the odd scrape because one of the hens was chased by a bigger dog in the back garden. And that in itself was a bit of a comedy of errors. As we looked out the window and saw the dog in the garden, I ran downstairs in my best evening trousers and a pair of Wellington boots.
J'ai rien vu. Je suis retournée me coucher. Un quart d'heure après, pareil, les poules qui criaient.
So,
je suis allée
a hedgehog climbed up the little ladder into the hen house and went to sleep in the nesting box. And this is an enormous husky. It's as big as me, and stupid and young, and in one of those mothers, children, shouting, hens being bitten moments of horror, I threw myself on the husky, pulled its jaws apart, removed the hen, shouted at the dog until it cowered on the floor and showed its belly, put the chicken back in the box, and then dragged the enormous dog back to its owner's garden.
Donc j'ai pris des gants. J'ai attrapé le hérisson et je l'ai mis dans une boîte à chat.
So, putting in a cat box and taking to a little forest not very far away so that it couldn't come back. Wow. Not quite sure how I managed to do that. Simultaneously managing to pick up a child under each arm and sit them very high up on the wall so that they were out of the way. The only damage was a very large hole in the knee of my favourite trousers.
Oh.
I saved the hen.
Well done. You saved the...
Et les hérissons, ça mange les poussins, ça mange les œufs et ça mange même les serpents. C'est carnivore les hérissons.
It will eat the hen's eggs, the chickens, and it will also eat small snakes.
Wow.
Because it's a kind
that morning was the morning when we discovered that Britain had voted to leave the EU. So standing there in tears in the garden, kind of going, oh wow, we lived this idyllic life beforehand where we didn't have foxes.
And now you've got a dead chicken and you're leaving the EU.
Yes.
Result.
Que fais-tu, poulette? Tu le vois, je ponds. Que ponds-tu, poulette? Mon petit œuf blanc. Qu'y a-t-il dedans? Un jaune et un blanc. Que fais-tu, poulette? Tu le vois, je couve. Que couves-tu, poulette? Mes petits œufs blancs. Qu'y a-t-il dedans? Des petits poussins, des jaunes, des blancs.
3 poules, 4 poules et 5. Là, je vais m'arrêter à 5. 5 œufs par jour, normalement.
So, for you, it's all about the eggs.
Pour les œufs, oui. Oui, oui.
Mm-hmm. You wouldn't ever eat one of your hens.
Tu ne manges pas.
Non. Non. Non, non.
Pourquoi pas?
Ça me ferait mal au cœur quand même. Je la mangerai pas avec appétit.
My grandparents moved to Ganga. Their neighbors have hens. When we were on holiday, we met them.
Did you miss the hens at all?
No, because I had all these other hens.
Okay.
Est-ce que vous allez le manger?
Non.
Pourquoi pas?
On va les laisser vivre jusqu'à la fin.
Yeah, but if
moi, je peux pas tuer les animaux.
Ah.
Ah non.
Végétarien.
Non.
Oh.
Non, mais tuer, non.
Non. Non.
Elles sont domestiquées, on les caresse, oui. Tout ça, c'est pas possible.
Oui. Comme toi.
Oui.
Italie.
One night Farmer Brown was taking the air, locked up the barnyard with the greatest of care. Down in the hen house something stirred when he shouted, "Who's there?" This is what he heard: "There ain't nobody here but us chickens. There ain't nobody here at all. So calm yourself and stop that fuss. There ain't nobody here but us. We chickens trying to sleep and you butt in."
Hello, this is Alexia.
Hi, Alexia. It's Zoe.
Hello there, Zoe. How are you?
Amazing. I can't believe this is working.
On the day when I was left with the deadhead, I had your video playing on my phone. I was outside in my garden and I would just like press play. Okay, go through a little bit. Okay, now do that. And it was like going on this journey with you. Mm-hmm. So I was really, really glad of what you'd done.
I was vegetarian for 12 years, vegan for 10 of those years. So if you'd told me long ago that I would have a YouTube video on humane chicken processing, I would definitely not have believed you. I even had a woman stop me in the grocery store once. Wait, I know you from somewhere. Where do I know you from? Oh, you're the chicken lady. The one with the chicken video.
In the hen house, something stirred when he shouted, "Who's there?" This is what he heard. There ain't nobody here but us chickens. There ain't nobody here at all.
So I want to eat meat, and yet I still love animals. And I don't want to be hypocritical about this, so I had better do my own animal processing. And it took me pretty much all day to do chicken processing the first time I did it.
Yeah.
But quite a journey of discovery. I was amazed. I thought, wow, I've studied biology in school for so many years, but this is really where the rubber meets the road. This is such an education about bodies and how they work and just how amazing life is and how we're put together and how similar I am to a chicken or a sheep. I've also processed sheep here on the farm. It's really helped me appreciate my life more.
Hey, boss man, what do you say?
Hi.
Hi, is that Osvanira?
Finally.
Yay. I got your name from Tom, who's seeing you with his dog.
Yeah, Pepino.
So your training was for poultry, isn't it?
Actually, I am animal scientist. I worked during 3 years with buffalo's behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started to work with hens, actually with poultry production. The last 2 years, I'm working with pets, so it's like...
So you're like my perfect person. You deal with pets, and you have a background with poultry. It's amazing. Yeah. Well, I'd like to ask you about my really specific situation.
Yeah, okay.
So I had these three hens, and then it was really my fault. I left the door open one night. And a fox came. The fox got one hen. One of the hens, I think, didn't see it. So I wonder about getting two more chickens to add, and if you think that this would be okay.
When all birds feel grief. They grieve. It's normal. I think that the one who is brooding, probably she didn't see anything, but she could hear something.
Yeah.
They have the ability to share emotional states. Mm. So probably what happens is the first one that stays brooding, she probably is traumatized too. I'm not sure. But there are a lot of experiments about how birds learn. They have a memory.
Yeah.
So probably what's going on is they have the memory about what happens. They feel the emotional state. It's unbalanced.
Yeah.
So if you give more experiences, if you give a different thing for them to do, maybe, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Because it's the same way that we're trying with dogs. I think you should try to make modifications mm-hmm. on your environment mm-hmm. and wait like 1-2 weeks and see how they behave and then try to put new individuals there.
Okay, that sounds like a great plan.
Eyes are brown, black tail, bluebell, speckledy, light Sussex star, white star. Partridge, Nero, Daisy Bell, Curlneck, Amberlink, Lavender Splash, Columbine.
Well, do you know what? Diamond's not broody, is she?
Yeah, no. So the thing must have worked.
Yeah. So we could go and get new hens. We could.
Today?
Yeah.
Do it.
Well, what I'll have to do is call Jane and see if we can go today.
Edinburgh Chickens started because I had chickens of my own and had an odd incident with fox and things like that. So I needed to replace chickens and couldn't find somewhere easily to buy them. Because of that, I thought there must be a gap in the market and decided to source some pullets that I could sell to people. We decided we'd just take the plunge. So we just got some cash together and cleared out some stables and put them in. Started from there and it just completely took off.
So it's not hobby hens, it's business hens.
It's business hens with the ones I buy in, but I do also keep hens in the garden, and I've gone from 4 or 5 and then up to about 10. And then as we started running this, I just sort of pick hens out at a time. So I have about 40 or 50 that are in the paddock at the back garden, they lay eggs, and we sell their eggs at the, you know, farm gate.
Are you sure we don't want a soft white one? We don't want that black one. Look, look. Do you think we're stressing them out?
Maybe, yeah, because
they're not
pet me.
It's all right.
Did we get a white one and a Columbine?
We got a Lavender Splash and a Columbine. And the Lavender Splash is like, she loves me. Do you know what? I was wanting a jet black one, but then the Lavender Splash and just went running around following me wherever I went. So it chose us instead.
And what about the Columbine? You chose the Columbine, didn't you?
It's so nice.
It's a sweet little hen, isn't it?
Yeah. But really scared. Sometimes she can really peck.
We've got one.
Okay.
Who chose us?
Sorry, is it the lavender?
Yes.
Okay. Which one?
That one there.
Right. You not catch her.
No. Oh.
I think what we've discovered is that, for want of a better phrase, there is a cut-off point between comprehension and action. And when we ate our first two hens, we explained what we were going to do to Juno, and she was very understanding about it and fully and happily participated in the magnificent coq au vin that Andrew created out of the two chickens. They were very well celebrated after they died. However, when it came around this time to the discussion, after we lost a hen, we discussed eating the others because they had seemingly come a little bit towards the end of their laying lives. Juno was horrified and wouldn't under any circumstances contemplate eating it. I think that what we discussed was that if we were to eat your hen with great pleasure, should we find ourselves in a necking and plucking situation of our own before too long,
we would indeed ask you to eat our hen.
Yes, and I think we'd be okay with that.
Yeah.
Princesse, chaussette, biscotte, chippy.
We'll never have another Jackie.
No.
Chippy, biscotte, rose, étoile.
What's the lavender splash called?
Chloe.
And why did you call her Chloe?
Because in France we met a girl who had like six hens, all identical, and I don't know how she told them apart.
So you named it after her?
She was really nice. Do you think you'll ever forget to shut them in again?
Well, I really hope not.
That was The Edible Pet by Zoe Irvin, a Radio Free New Commission funded by Creative Scotland. It featured, in order of appearance, Daniel Manson, Rab Lendrum, Chloe Manson, Gilbert Manson, June O'Neill, Rebecca Palmer, Eva and Nicole, Logan Young, Alexia Allen, Doreen Young, Jill Lendrum, Michael Davitt, Pauline Wilson, Maurice Young, Robert Young, Geraldine Brenner, Osvanira Alves, and Jane Hunter. And now on Radio Free New Redux, Lament for the Glasgow High-Rise by Duke Cameron. This piece is about the loss of Glasgow's high-rises and the change in the makeup of the city as a result, making it less dense, less vertical, and usually more suburban. This major regeneration effort was an attempt to lose the stigma that came to be associated with high-rises, but Cameron believes that the loss of the buildings as part of the cityscape are a huge loss, now blown up and gone forever.
This is the audio version of the short film Lament for the Glasgow High-Rise, which, as its title suggests, deals with the loss of many high-rises which came to our skies in the late 60s and 70s and have been demolished for one reason or another. As far as Glasgow's skyline goes, it's never going to be the same again. Lament for the Glasgow High-Rise. There used to be four of these blocks. Now there's two. Another two are coming down. There are only 10 occupied flats in the two blocks at Tory Glen now. Another tower was blown up and its neighbouring low-rises ripped down here after being painted for a Sony advert. White Vale and Blue Vale, the twins, are coming down this year, 90 metres high and two of the best in the city. Excellent brutalism. I fucking love high-rises. I like seeing them from different angles and vantage points in Glasgow and from miles away. Really different as the seasons, weather and light change. But the peak is over for Glasgow. There used to be over 200 high-rises in the city. They have different fates, but usually either demolished, refurbished or sold. By 2022, over 10,000 homes will have been reduced to rubble. There used to be four of the blocks at the Glorbals, thousands of people. Now one remains, and it's going to go as well. Castle Milk Three Amigos have been refurbished, but five others were taken down. Scotland's tallest listed building, 24 stories, sits in Annie's Land. At least that's protected. The ones in Maryhill, hopefully those bad boys are around for a few decades more. Another two blocks at Sight Hill were demolished in a nighttime explosion. There's three left, two of which are going to go in the next year. The ones in St Rollox must get a great view of the massive new Tesco car park. Red Road. An eight-block scheme and the holy grail of Glasgow's high-rises. One of the big blocks in the main road was stripped of asbestos and then blown up the other year. There was one last block with people living in it, and they were surrounded by a building site. Then finally, the last ones were demolished by explosives. Smart pubs often service smart high-rises, often as brutalist as the structures towering above them. At Shawbridge, there used to be at least another two massive blocks here, and some more low-rises. The two blocks I've just mentioned were demolished by the time the short film this audio is based on was made. Such bold moves by planners and architects pioneering vertical living in Scotland are unlikely to be taken again. It's a shame that trees often get in the way of photos and shots of Glasgow's best post-war architecture. There used to be nine high-rises round about the Ibrox area. Three of them still look like rubble and wasteland now after being exploded. There are another three plus tenements and housing along the empty streets, still with the roads and lampposts. Of one of the clusters of three, two of the three were demolished, and the last block underwent £7 million worth of refurbishment and was then marketed as new flats for sale. A few years before that, they were unrecognisable, classic 60s/70s prefab type high rise, terraces, walkways, stairwells, probably quite intimidating to away fans. Alternative uses for empty high rises could be 25-storey nightclub with a different kind of music across each floor, sky bar, floating chippy, arts and culture venue, skate park, super homeless hostel, super brothel, laser quest, series of mini cinemas, gadget commune, harmless crime tolerance zone, the world's biggest artificial climbing wall, three rooms for incubating arts and business, flats with more space and rooms, room for people who have missed the last bus and can't afford the taxi, or all of the above. We'll be right back. The new generation of high-rises is driven by consumerism, different to the rationale for development in the 60s and 70s of rehousing the war heroes and pushing the boundaries of modernism and truthism and concrete as a material. Maybe in 20 years, all the high-rises that are left and have survived will then be demolished, turned into two-storey houses with driveways and expansive suburbia across Glasgow, even more so than now. Let's hope not. Dedicated to my wife, who once said, "I wish you looked at me the way you look at high rises."
You've been listening to Lament for the Glasgow High-Rise by Duke Cameron. Radiophrenia is supported by Creative Scotland. For more details on our activities, visit our website at www.radiophrenia.scot.